And goes tromping around wearing boots like LeBlanc.
My fastball, it's 88 miles an hour.
Oh, what a moi LeBlanc.
Welcome back to Dome and Bedlam. My name is Nathan Bishop. I am the managing editor of Lookout Landing. We're here in the midst of a sad and miserable month of June, and I am joined by one of my usual cohorts in David Skiba. David, how are we?
I am knee-deep in a pile of ex-girlfriend letters, and it feels better than the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Also joining us is staff writer and first time on the podcast. We're very excited to have her, Kate Prusser. Kate, what is good today?
Not a lot.
Go Mariners. And that's our show.
Thanks for checking in, folks.
You all go outside, go for a run. You know?
Find someone you love.
Yeah. More importantly, someone that will love you back. Because baseball will not.
No.
You guys, what happened? It's been probably like 3 or 4 weeks since we've really had a chance to sit down and commiserate, and things were so good, and now they're just so Mariner.
You know,
we've left the population of like a small African country on base.
It's true.
That's one of the things that's been not so awesome.
Now I want to know which African country has the smallest population. So.
Is it Djibouti? I feel like it's got to be Djibouti.
I was going to say Djibouti, but it could also be Lesotho.
Smallest population. Because I want to compare and contrast to the Mariners left on base numbers.
To that population?
Which is 23 just in this series, FYI. So
right.
We need something with at least 23 souls aboard.
So yeah, I mean, that's like a small skiff that could cross the ocean, manned by 23 people.
I mean, yeah.
Mariners, even.
Yes. Yeah. So they lost today, 5-1, I think. I'm going to be honest. I didn't watch.
It was 5-1.
Was it 5-1?
It was.
So, relative to a lot of their wins, that's actually a huge defeat because after this loss, they are now in their last 26 games, 8-18, and have managed to pull off that record by being outscored by 7 runs. Accumulatively in those 25 games, meaning that the vast majority of those games have been excruciating, driving bamboo in under your fingernails, getting punched in the groin, etc., etc.
Yeah, that checks out.
Feels about right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. I'm just thinking that. Yeah, it's been absolutely brutal.
And I think one of the weird things that's been so frustrating is you still look at their numbers. David, you and I were talking before the show started. Mm-hmm. They still have the fourth highest WRC plus in all of baseball.
Yeah, they're tied with the Cubs for WRC plus.
And the pitching's been much worse for injury and regression reasons, but it's not like it's catastrophic. It's not one of the worst pitching staffs in baseball.
They've been like that nursery rhyme. Like, when they've been good, they've been very, very good. And when they've been bad, they've been awful.
It's true.
Is that a nursery rhyme? I don't know that one.
Yes. There was a little girl who had a little curl right in the middle of her forehead. And when she was good, she was very, very good. And when she was bad, she was horrid.
Oh.
That like is the Mariners. I had a mental image of Leonis Martin while you were reading that poem to me.
I have no idea why that would overlap with my Mariners fandom, that being my favorite nursery rhyme.
Yeah, it's been brutal. We've definitely hit the part of the season. I think it's the losing, but it's also just the accumulation of games where the games are really starting to run together now.
Totally.
You know, like June has been... At the beginning of the season, I feel like every game is almost like a season of television. Like, it has all of these acts and these ebbs and these flows. And then as the season goes on, it starts to feel like a week is like, you know, a half season of television. Now we're at the point where, like, a month is like, that's an episode. You know, like, we just kind of roll through it. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's all Breaking Bad for some reason.
Do we remember the last day the Mariners were in first place?
It was like 3 weeks ago. Something like
was it,
that.
Were we still in first place for the Padres series?
Oh. I believe so, because right after we went to Texas and fell out of first place.
Yeah.
We have not really had a full show since before that one, because we had a nice celebratory show after that 10-run comeback, and then we've been kind of hit and miss since then due to scheduling difficulties. So there's just so much to talk about. I don't really want to dwell on it. I don't think you guys do either. I mean, anybody who's listening has watched it. It's been awful.
I mean, could I maybe point out we're not even in second place anymore. We are now, as of today, in third place.
There's a few Astros fans on Twitter that have been nice enough to let me know that.
Point that out.
Nice. How helpful.
Which I will say I richly deserve, because I gave them mountains of shit in April. So that's fine. You know, I can take it.
What goes around comes around.
Yep. But you know what? I still live in Seattle. Guess where Houston is? Still in Houston.
Here's what I just did some quick math while we've been speaking. So the smallest nation in Africa is St. Helena, Ascension, and Tristan da Cunha. It's a looks like a post of the UK. There's 4,000 people who live there.
Whoa.
According to trends for the entire 2016 season, the Mariners are averaging 6.6 runners left on base per game.
You're playing about 70 games.
I will say that in the last, I went with 19 games. It's probably much higher than that, but I used the average for the last 19 games since they fell out of first place. So that's 126 runners left on base, or 3% of the population of the smallest African nation.
Jesus. That's where we're at. We are getting to the point where we can make ridiculous mathematical computations.
But here's squad goals. here's what I will say. Somehow, the Mariners' Pythagorean record is still a game better than the Texas Rangers. By Pythag, the Mariners should be theoretically at 41 wins, and the Rangers should be at 40.
Well, and that's – I mean, we could talk about this for a half an hour, but – and I'd love to know what you guys think about this, but we talk a lot in baseball about regression to the mean, about, trends are not unsustainable trends and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I've been thinking about that as the Mariners have been losing, because it really has been, it has felt like every single game there has been a moment where they could have seized the game and taken control and won it. And they have failed almost every single time all of June. And it's made me think about how we want to talk about that, because when I say, and I believe that I expect the team to stop doing that and to play better, I don't think that that's random chance. I don't think that the Mariners are losing because of bad luck. The things that are happening to them predominantly are not them hitting balls right at people or, you know, bleeders getting through. Yesterday, kind of an exception because Paxton gave up a fluky infield single, but by and large, they're just failing in high leverage situations. They're striking out with guys on third and less than two outs. Their relievers are giving up huge home runs. So when we say that we expect this to even out over the long run, it's not magic or coin flips. It's we expect them to play better, right? Like they've earned, it doesn't matter that they've lost these games by small runs or that they've had a chance to win. They've earned most of these losses. Wouldn't you agree? Like it's felt like they have not played well enough to win.
I feel like we need to bonk Nelson Cruz over the head with a flower pot so he remembers
what it was.
He's Nelson motherfucking Cruz.
Fair enough.
He may have forgotten. It certainly seems like he has.
Yeah.
It's been ugly.
The last eight games or so, he sat today, and I think I put this out on Slack. It really feels like, and I think there's a decent chance that if he had legitimately not swung the bat one time in any of his at-bats for the last week, the team may have won one or two more games. Because he hit into something like five double plays in 6 days or something like that.
I think it was
like
actually
that.
Six. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and he's been coming up with guys on base and nobody out or one out and time. And I'm not criticizing. I'm not hating on the guy. I love Nelson Cruz. Yeah, I love the guy. But he is just been killing this offense when one of your two best hitters is constantly making two outs every time he comes up. There's been so many times, even when the offense has scored runs and gotten 7 to 8 runs, it feels like, man, they could have had 12, 13 that night. You know what I mean? They're still leaving so many runs on the board.
And
they haven't piled on.
Go ahead, Kate.
with the problems with the rotation and the number of runs they're giving up, we have to be scoring those runs.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's not a luxury anymore. It's like, our starter might give up 5 or 6 or 7 runs.
Yeah.
So to have a chance to win, we have to score 8, 9, 10. And that felt very possible in April and May, and it doesn't feel so possible.
And if we do score 5 or 6 or 7, it feels like we're going to give up 6, 7, or 8. You know, it just felt like whatever way is necessary to lose, we're going to do it. Yeah. And today was a great example of that. The team fell behind 4-0. Miguel Cabrera hit a bomb. Jose Iglesias hit a mistake pitch to the wall that a major league left fielder catches. But we have Nori Aoki yelling serpentine every time that the ball gets hit to him. Like somebody's trying to drop a grenade on him and he's trying to definitely avoid it. But so they fall behind 4-0. And this team, you know, through Michael Fulmer, I think is the name of the Tigers starter. In the fifth, he completely lost his command, loaded the bases with one out. And you have Seth Smith and Robinson Cano do up. It's a 4-1 game at that point. And then like that's the moment, like we've been talking about every game they've had this opportunity. And you chase the starter in 4 1/3. They replace him for a generic left-handed reliever. And he strikes out Franklin Gutierrez, who was properly pinch hit, for Seth Smith. And then Robinson Cano grounds out to first. And it's like, you know, how can you even be mad at Scott Servais when that kind of stuff happens?
Definitely
like, those are the right matchups. Those are the guys you want up in those situations. They just have to do it. You know, and then they have 4 innings against, so-so Tigers bullpen, and they just over the field.
So they're actually pretty bad, the Tigers bullpen, right?
I was trying to play it up for the sake of argument, but yeah,
they're not good.
They're the Tigers
bullpen. But I think that makes the argument even stronger. Like, we're not able to capitalize on poor relievers, which...
Yeah. And it's just such a bizarre string of games because, I mean, the Mariners, even right now, their team FIP is below in the positive mean average. It's a above average pitching staff, not by a more than a couple ticks, but it's not like they're bottom of the league.
Yeah. They're really they're really suffering with
one run losses,
and the starters are the starting pitching injuries are killing them. I mean, they've
lengthened the bullpen.
Yeah, I think they got 7 1/3 from Paxton yesterday, and we'll circle back around to him because oh my god, I love him so much. But you know that's they've been missing those kind of starts so much. I mean, they're getting so many 4 to 5 and a 2/3 inning performance.
No one's making it to the seventh except for, of course, Paxton.
And it's just putting so much stress. And you know, those pitchers that pitch the sixth and seventh tend to be the worst pitchers on a staff when a starter can't go through them. And sure enough, you know, Nick Vincent has been crashing down to earth with some home runs. And there's definitely DePoto definitely acquired a type of reliever in this offseason that can be effective. But when they're not effective, they give up home runs. And you're really seeing that right now.
That's
so,
the issue.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And Kate, you just did a really awesome piece on bullpen usage. And we've added a piece in Tom Wilhelmsen. So if you could maybe talk about bullpen usage and then, you know, what do you think happens with bringing Tom onto the staff in lieu of Jonathan Haro?
Yeah, I would love to talk about
that.
Well, before we start, we need to make it clear that the plan per the team is that Wilhelmsen is going to Tacoma on Friday.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah, because then they've got it's some weird, like, baseball union has so many odd roster.
So they had
things.
To sign him.
They had to
a
sign him,
league.
Put him on the major league Got roster, it. And then put him on something called optional waivers, which he has to sit on for 48 hours before he can go down. But then they're
because
gonna,
theoretically somebody could have jumped in and claimed him, right?
But they're revocable waivers, so if somebody had claimed him, the Mariners could have just pulled him back. I don't know how it all goes from there.
Wow,
that's entirely
optional waivers, which was funny because they were obligatory. So you figure it out.
So you tell me what's going on.
Oh, yeah.
Baseball.
Get your shit together, man, Fred.
Crazy diamond.
Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I just wanted to make it clear. I'm excited about Wilhelmsen being back and that broke today. But we're not planning on him immediately being a part of this bullpen. So anyway, Kate, your work on bullpen usage, which was wonderful. You made a graph. I loved it.
It was hard making that graph. I'm not going to lie. I was sent in college to take remedial maths because I could not pass our sad little entrance exam at like a highly liberal arts Southern all girls school. So imagine how bad I am at math.
That lemonade recipe was just all off, darling. I'm sorry.
This sweet tea ain't right.
No, No, literally, I think that that was some of what we did in my class, because we certainly weren't doing real math. But yeah, so I tried to make a bullpen usage chart just because I wanted to. It was actually born out of a discussion in the Slack that you and I were having, David, where we talked about do the Mariners have an eighth inning guy?
Yeah. Like,
it's the eighth inning guy.
Mm-hmm.
Which kind of made me think, well, who's the seventh inning guy, or who's the long reliever guy? I mean, really, the only thing that I think is kind of set in stone is C-Sheck is the closer.
Yeah, there's danger in the club in the ninth.
Yeah, absolutely. But we've had to use him in a few non-closer situations just because of the weird, fluky things that have happened. Like, he has to get work every so often. When was the last time we saw C-Sheck in a game, honestly?
Prince Fielder hit a fly ball a long way.
Oh, God.
That was the last, like, save situation that I remember.
That was – well, we can get into that later, because there's a great Twitter question for later about – that we'll get to there.
Ooh.
Every team makes mistakes in every baseball game, and right now every mistake the Mariners are making is that Prince Fielder fly ball.
Yeah.
So.
And, Kate, what you discovered was Nick Vincent was the highest leverage reliever?
Well, C-Sheck is the highest.
Yes, yes.
Non-closer.
Nick Vincent is an interesting, like, sneakily valuable reliever for, again, someone we got out of, like, the change in DePoto's couch, which, you know, I'm sure is very handsome change, but still.
Right.
It's a well-polished penny.
Much. He's running an almost 30% K rate right now and an almost 6%, like a sub 6% walk rate.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez.
So, I mean, his numbers are fantastic.
He's been great. Months.
Yeah.
He's really been nails where they've asked him, and he's gone into some pretty high leverage situations. Only two people who have more leverage when they've entered the game are obviously C-Sheck and Benoit. So he's got the third highest leverage, and yet he is able to pitch one inning, two innings, maybe even three innings if we have to have him do that. So he's just been really valuable. And, you know, his mistakes loom large, the home runs he's given up.
Yeah.
They look big just because for every reliever, it's always such a small sample size. It's always kind of high leverage. Like
one mistake. Like the pitch in Tampa to Longoria with two out. That's the one I remember.
Totally.
Which was a good, which was not a bad pitch. It was low and away.
No.
Longoria hammered it. What are you going to do?
What are you going to do? And I mean, that's tough for relievers. That's why relieving is such a tough job.
They must drink a fair amount.
Well, one of them's a bartender.
Oh, yeah.
God, I'm so glad he's back.
Me too. Curious. And for him being so happy to be here.
I know.
He's just a Northwest guy, you know?
Like, oh, God, he is. Yeah.
As somebody who lived like 8 years in Philadelphia, and I consider it, I used to come back and feel like Persephone, you know, like I'd eaten pomegranates. And I was getting to spend like a couple months out of the year here because I was a teacher, so I had like summers off. But I didn't ever feel whole or complete. And I saw him talking on this pregame show about how, you know, this was his home. He considers the Pacific Northwest his home. He considers Seattle his home. It's where he started his family. And, you know, baseball is a tough job. You're uprooted a lot. Yeah. You're on the road all the time. And I think that there's a lot we don't see about the mental effects of being plucked up out of your home and sent all these different places. And my God, is there a worse place to go than Texas? Uncle Hounson, is there a worse place he could be sent than Texas?
I'm just trying to think.
I'm thinking.
Probably
not.
Arlington specifically is not a great place.
Yeah.
I mean.
He could get down in Phoenix.
He used to bartend in Phoenix.
Yeah.
Phoenix is fine. It's whatever. Phoenix is what you want it to be. Yeah. I don't want to go. I think I mentioned this in Slack. I don't want to go to like source and that kind of thing. But like I reached out to a couple people that I know that have a little more access to the team. And because everything just sounded like, man, he is so happy to be in Seattle. Like this was the plan. And when I said, man, I said to one person, I was just like, man, it really sounds like he's happy to be back in Seattle. And just the only response I got was, I said, it sounds like he really hated it in Texas. And I just got a 3-word response, which was just no weed there. Which, I mean, honestly, that makes me love Tom even more.
Absolutely.
I can't remember if you can. Can you test positive? Do they test for weed in the MLB drug joint agreement? I can't remember.
No clue.
I hope not, and I hope that he's blazing trees like a motherfucker.
Well, I had a friend who had a bar here in West Seattle, and Tom lived in West Seattle. He actually lived, I think, fairly close to where I live.
Okay.
So I've seen pictures on Instagram, that his wife's Instagram, that look like they were taken from my backyard. So he's close. I've gone on several walks around the neighborhood to try to find him. But
and because walks are good, it wasn't the only reason. What?
Yeah.
What?
Walks are also very great for you.
It's fine.
And, you know, if the side benefit is I should happen to run into Tom and his lovely wife, then
whatever. It's an ancillary benefit.
But I had a friend who had a bar in West Seattle, and he said Tom used to stop in a lot, and that he was just like the nicest, coolest, most fun, like just no airs about him, would love to just kick back and shoot the shit with him for a while. And,
yeah.
So, you know, I just think he's a Northwest guy, and I'm glad he's back.
And to be clear, too, this isn't some mercy case or some guy coming back to retire as a Mariner. Like, his season has been pure, pure shit. Like, it is the tunnel that Andy Dufresne crawled through in Shawshank Redemption. That is.
Will Tom be clean on the other side?
Yeah, we don't know yet. It'll be raining one way or the other. That'll help wash him off. But
I mean, it's bizarre, though, how bad his numbers
but
are.
But his stuff is good.
His stuff is still good, apparently. Still hitting, like, 94 so.
And did you guys see the comments from DePoto today? Which basically said that they'd heard that Texas was asking him to work a little bit more on his two-seam, try to get the ball down, work on ground balls, which makes sense since it's 130 degrees in Texas and their fence is about 200 feet away. For now, we'll see what the new stadium is once they replace that 12-month-old derelict that they have down there for a stadium with about $6 billion worth of taxpayer money. Enjoy that, you shitheads. Anyway... I may have to edit that out. I won't edit it out.
Maybe back to relievers as a whole.
Yeah, no, but that's not Tom's game. He is not a keep the ball down two seam fastball guy. That's just not him. His game is 98 miles an hour
and hammer curve.
The hammer of Thor is what I used to call it before Noah Syndergaard took that nickname.
Well, enjoy it because that nickname's on the DL right now.
Is it? Ooh. Did he go on the DL now?
Yep.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Poor him. You could see that coming. That's sad.
Which, speaking of DL, I want to maybe transition. Hey, it's me on the DL.
let's keep this on the DL, David.
I want to transition to maybe looking forward, which is we're now in a scenario where the Mariners have had a shit-tastic month with five guys hitting the DL. Six? Five?
A lot.
And
three-fifths of the rotation. Well, yeah. Taiwan, it sounds like he's going to avoid the DL.
That's true.
He's been hit and miss the entire month with this foot problem.
But so we're getting healthier. We have replaced Felix Hernandez with whatever the hell James Paxton is for the time being. And we are on
Seraphim
June 22nd.
Seraphim descended from heaven with God's holy fastball on his left
and on
arm.
June 22nd, the Seattle Mariners are 36-36 and three games out of the wild card.
Which, at the beginning of the year, this has been the weirdest ass way to get there. But that is about what we expected this team to be. Right?
Yeah.
And you're looking at a division leading Rangers team that just put 3/5 of their rotation on the DL.
And the good 3/5.
Derek Holland to the DL. Colby Lewis is going to miss 2 months.
With dad back, I believe, is the official diagnosis there.
I think it's a lat sprain, but okay.
Oof.
Dad lat.
It's whatever shut down Iwakuma last year.
Okay.
So.
Oh, that's a nasty injury.
Darvish is question mark. You can't have everything?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I personally, you guys, I'm going to be honest, like, I've kind of said goodbye to the division. It doesn't matter whether I think the Rangers are going to keep this up or not, because they won't. But they'd have to really fall on their face, and we'd have to catch fire. And, oh, by the way, we're behind the Astros now, as we mentioned earlier. So we've got another team now we've got to fight with. But yeah, you can. We talked about this before we went on air. There's a parallel there between the Rangers' June and the Mariners' May. And then right at the end of May, the Mariners started seeing attrition with injuries. Leonis Martin, Ketel Marte, Felix Hernandez, Wade Miley now, And then it just kind of went on, and that's all had a domino effect. Now, the Rangers as an organization are way deeper because they've actually had a competent GM for more than 8 months, unlike the Seattle Mariners. So they're better positioned to survive that. But, you know, they're not going to keep this up for whatever it's worth.
Can we talk a little bit about that? Because, I mean, obviously there's the one-run games record. Yep. So they're 13-4 in one-run games.
Unreal.
Which is a winning percentage of 765, which would be...
just a tick below their season total, I think.
Exactly.
I mean, that would be record-setting. Yes. That would knock the Orioles off of... I think they set it back in the 90s?
The Orioles were a few years ago. It was like 2013 or something like that. It was like 39 and 9. I'll butcher it if I try to do it off the top of my head.
To put it in perspective, everyone will tell you that the Cubs are this amazing team. The Rangers have as many wins as the Cubs. 47.
It's true.
The Cubs just got swept.
That's true.
By the Cardinals.
No. We're getting ready to come to Seattle. Yeah.
The Rangers just swept, right?
Exactly. It's bonkers. I
mean, they're bonkers right now, but it's not. So Ian Desmond obviously is who I have a personal grudge against because he totally tanked my fantasy team last year, which is the dumbest reason to have a grudge against a player, but I don't care. Like,
I would argue it's the best.
No, I just kept starting him because I was like, he's going to break out of this. Like,
he's been good. Yeah. I've been shocked how well he's played in center field.
God,
he's an athlete, you know,
apparently so.
The defense doesn't surprise me. He's still running a 23% K rate though.
Yeah. Mm. But his power is such that he can overcome that. I mean, he crushes.
He's in Arlington.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is he's carrying right now a 381 BABIP. So that's going to come down.
That's a little bit below the Rangers team average too, I think, actually. All right. Enough bitching about the Rangers. I don't care. Screw them.
But okay. I guess, okay, so we're looking at the wild card, and the teams ahead of us are now by a half game. You got the Astros.
Who are good.
By a game, the Tigers, and then the Royals and
them
the Blue Jays.
Ass, I'm not scared of them anyway. I don't care.
I think the Royals are due for a pretty big fall.
Uh-huh.
Well, we've got Blue Jays and the Sox are currently holding the wild card slots, and then you got the Astros and Tigers. Team? Yeah, the Orioles are in first. The Mark Trumbo led.
That's not going to last.
I don't like that.
I just don't think it's strong enough to – that's going to crumble eventually.
Yeah. Well, the East is just going to beat itself up all year.
Yep. I agree. We're going to take a break in a few minutes, but before we do that, can we circle back around to James Paxton and close out the segment with something happy? Because
– And Diaz,
you
too.
And Diaz. Yeah.
Yes.
Relievers.
Let's talk about both the flame arms.
Yes. So if we want to talk about – so – we can start with Diaz because I want to end with Paxton because I love him. But yeah, so Diaz has been up for a couple weeks now. I need to look his numbers up because I don't have them in front of me. But he has been – so it's really hard to get excited about the idea of taking your team's best pitching prospect and before he fails as a starter saying, you know what, you're going to be a reliever now.
At the age of 22?
Yeah. The last time the Mariners did that, it was with Brandon Morrow, which they actually had a little bit of success with. He was both an effective reliever and an okay-ish starter for a little while for them. But you're still not excited about it. You want that starter out of your top prospect. And the Mariners said, you know what, we're not going to – I don't know if they're going to end up going back around to it and maybe – trying to turn him back next year, but said, you know what? We don't believe in your changeup. We have a contending team this year. We're going to turn you into a reliever. And if you're going to do that with a guy, he has largely done pretty much exactly what you're hoping for in his seven games thus far with the team. He has eight innings. He has a 2.25 ERA, a 3.62 FIP. He is touching, I think he touched close to 102 in his debut.
He did hit 102.
Yeah, he's probably by the end of the year going to be the team's best relief pitcher. Whether he's the closer or not, that's a different thing, but because that takes a different mindset. But he could easily be the shutdown eighth inning guy to get to Cishek.
Actually, though, I think one of the things that's most valuable about him is because of that starter background, he's able to give you two innings of shutdown relief. And we need that right now because of all the problems in the rotation.
I agree. I mean, ideally, the rotation gets healthy and starts throwing six and seven innings again, and then we have a lead, and then he comes in the eighth and breathes fire all over everybody, just goes Dracarys and just melts everyone's face. But no, I totally agree, Kate. And what start was it? There was a start earlier. Was it a Wade Miley start where he had to throw almost three innings of relief?
And he threw 2.2 innings against the Rays on 6/14.
2 2/3, I think, right? Something like that. Yeah, and you saw him dial the fastball back to closer to, you know, 95, 96, and dialed it down
to 96,
and was just nails. And to have the presence of mind to do that, to have the ability as a 22-year-old to recognize that he needs to pace himself and not go max effort, and still be commanding his pitches and be highly effective. That I totally agree. That ability to go one inning plus is a huge thing for a reliever.
And he had 5 punch outs in that 2 2/3.
So it was awesome.
Slider is what we thought it was, and it is devastating.
Nasty. Absolutely nasty. And
if
see
he can hit 101.
Yeah, haven't seen that since the debut, but he definitely touches 98, 99. And just like when we talked to Brendan Golowski, who writes on the site and helps out, he had mentioned in his scouting report, having seen him in the minors, that delivery is a little bit deceptive and guys don't pick up the ball well. And you can kind of see that too. There's a left shoulder turn that closes the body to the batter, and kind of he keeps that ball behind his torso pretty late into the delivery. So it's coming out 98, 99, and maybe even adding, you know, 1 to 2 miles an hour off of the perception of the hitter. So I'm really excited about it. It's really cool. I want the team to be in position to need it more.
And speaking of flamethrowers, Jimmy Paxton.
Behold the gentle Canadian.
Not so gentle. Trying to be more hearted. Service gave him a talking to.
Yeah.
Getting an edge about pitching with a chip on his shoulder. You know, he said, well, I've always been an internalizer. Because he is. Because he's a Ravenclaw. He is House Ravenclaw. He is of us.
Is he a beater, maybe?
He's actually the ball that the beaters hit.
With the maple leaf.
Yeah.
Don't make me get my backup defending that tattoo, because I will. Tyler O'Neill has the same tattoo.
We don't need to get into it. We don't need to go into James.
You were Max's ready though, tattoo. Kate.
Yeah, you were ready to go. No, there is no story on the Mariners right now that makes me happier than the James Paxton story. And, you know, again, shitty June and all, there are still a lot of fun players on this team that are having great years, that are really entertaining to watch. We just talked about the Wilhelmsen story. There are plenty of things to enjoy about watching this team, as long as you don't care if they lose every single day, because that's what they're doing. But James Paxton is about as star-crossed a prospect as you can get. I mean, this guy, he's not young anymore. He's 27 years old. He's just now gotten to the point where he's surpassed what's kind of a full year in the big leagues as far as accumulation, and it's taken him about three years seasons. To do so due to just injury and inconsistency. And if you saw the guy in spring training, as we all did, his velocity was down. He was getting crushed, and he just had that same just hound dog, like, just, sad that I'm pitching. I guess it's fine. Just, you know, like, he just looks like Eeyore out there a lot of the time. And somehow, even before, he wasn't even doing this in Tacoma. He came up in San Diego the day before, I think, the great comeback, and got crushed in that first inning. Gave up 2 home runs.
Horrible string of luck.
He also gave up 2 home runs, but
he should have been out of the inning well before, based on luck.
He got some.
Pitched that ball into center field.
That was the end of things.
Yes, he's not a good defender. Still is not. But
no, I disagree. He's getting off the mound so much better. I think that was just rust, honestly. No,
I think it was some nerves. Yeah.
Oil can.
Oil can.
Yeah. So but even in that first inning when he was getting lit up, I watched that game. I don't get a chance to just sit and watch games very much, having 2 young kids and a full-time job and all that stuff. But that was one where I did. And I sat down, and even as he was getting crushed, I wasn't really mad, because I kept looking at that velocity reading and noticing that he was sitting 97, 98, 99 miles an hour. It's like, well, he's never done that before. And like, you know, guys are squaring him up. He's getting too much of the plate, et cetera, et cetera. But it's one inning. Like, where is, can he keep this velocity up? And then lo and behold, he did through that start. And then he's done it in every other start since then. The guy has the fastest left-handed fastball, starter or reliever, in the game of baseball for, by like 2.5 miles an hour or something like that. Like, he's lapping the field. And
except for Chapman.
Right. He doesn't have the sample size yet. Thank you for that correction. You know why he doesn't? It's because he's a shitbag. Anyway, so he's got this blazing left-handed fastball that he's never shown before, but he's sustaining it. He's also throwing more strikes than he's ever thrown before. And he's added this, and this is the big difference between that first inning in San Diego and every other inning he's pitched. He did not throw one of those cutter slider things.
So filthy.
Not one of those in the first inning against San Diego where he got crushed. He added that and has been a completely different guy since. And he's still running like a 385 BABIP. With some ridiculous home run to fly ball. Like yesterday's start, he gave up 11 hits.
7.1% is his home run to fly ball.
Jeez. Yeah. And he gave up, I think, 11 hits yesterday and 7 1/3. And at least half of those were ground balls. And I mean, come on. Like, those have to start finding gloves sooner or later. So it's, if there's one thing on this team right now that I'm excited about more than anything else, it's James Paxton. Because, you know, if you cast aside all of our baggage that we have with him and all of his baggage, and he's cast a lot of his baggage aside as he's in way better shape, he looks like a number two pitcher in a rotation.
Exchange for whatever Felix was at the time.
Yeah. So it's been a net, and it's a bummer that we haven't made, I mean, just like Felix, we haven't made any hay with it. I think we've won one of his starts, but it's been thrilling to watch. And he seems like a great guy, and, you know, I'm a sucker for guys that, like, I was big on the Jesus Montero train and his struggle with weight and personal fitness and him getting his life together. And James wasn't quite that bad, but he's definitely a bigger guy. And seeing him
commit, he looks so good.
He looks great. And so it's just been, I don't know. It's been awesome.
And it has to be said, looking forward, I mean, the next 2 or 3 years, we pretty much, if this is what James Paxton really is, which we still don't know that for sure, but if this is him as a starting pitcher, we pretty much just gained a number two for the cost of what James Paxton we thought was a number six.
It does wonders for this rotation.
Yeah.
Because they still have club control with him. And as frustrating as I find him, they still have so much club control for Nate Karns, who's a perfectly viable major league pitcher. Mm-hmm. And you know, if they get Taiwan under control, that's 3/5 right there that you have a lot of cheap club control.
And you have Felix for... Yeah.
Yeah. That's something that we're waiting to see. So, you guys have any last things you want to run through before we take a quick break, get a word from our sponsor and get another guest in here?
Is it really selfish to say that, now that Syndergaard is on the DL, I look forward to James Paxton overtaking all of these leader categories. He already has a better whiff rate, 22% on his fastball versus Syndergaard's of 20.
Ooh, I like it.
I think he can maybe like lap him in some of these other cats. So I'm really, I mean, I like Noah a lot. He seems like a really nice guy. Good follow on Twitter. But
he's not a Mariner.
He's not. And I want all the good things for James Paxton, who I've very emotionally attached to ever since I wrote the 40 and 40 about him.
Which was fantastic too. Yeah, I love that. Yeah, you've been following him for a while, right, Kate? So this just has to be just mana for you.
Yeah,
it is. I like to call him Sky Point, and when he comes up and when he does that, I sing Sky Point.
But you know what happens when he does that?
The ball goes out.
Yeah, it tends to be.
It is not a strike.
The funniest thing, it's the most misguided attempt to help.
I think that's what I love best is even as he's up there, you know, 5-6 ticks above his career, he's got career high K rate and low career low walk rate, and yet that's a reminder that he is still our same James.
Still Jimmy P.
Well, gosh darn, you guys look at that ball fly there through that sky. My goodness gracious. It's going a long ass ways. I don't know why. Well, he did go to college in Kentucky, but it's Canadians true. Don't talk that way.
He's probably more of a Derby man, yeah.
All right.
Now
we have
I
other topics to get to.
One of those big fancy hats, and it's fantastic.
What do you think? I like to think that James Paxton could be a cosplayer or cosplay or however they say it.
I think it's cosplay.
I thought it was cosplay.
We need Goldsmith here.
Yeah.
He's the anime expert.
James as a furry?
I could totally.
Do you think James Paxton still has his Tamagotchi?
It's on his watch.
You know, he just got a rescue dog, and it's apparently it's a difficult training thing. You know, she's very skittish. She was mistreated.
Sure.
And so I just like to think, like, James is kind of our rescue dog.
Oh, got the ears for it.
baleful eyes.
All right, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to get back here with other staff contributor, Anders Jorstad, and we'll see where that goes. But before that, we have a word from our sponsor. Who's going to read that today?
I mean, whoever wants to.
I want to. Is that okay if I do that?
You may.
Thank you very much. So who is our podcast sponsor today?
Our podcast sponsor today comes from Soundworks. The Cambridge Soundworks Oots Angle 3.
Ooh, I've heard of that.
I've heard good things about that.
I have too. So thanks to Cambridge, here's our podcast sponsor. Summer is all about sensation. Watching the blue waves meet the white sand, the smell of the barbecue, the warmth of long days turning into longer nights. Most of all, though, my summer needs a great soundtrack. Hey, folks. Nathan Bishop here to tell you about the easy way I turned my summer from hot to straight up lit when I purchased the Cambridge Soundworks Oots Angle 3 Bluetooth speaker. Summer is for good friends and fun times, and if you're anything like me, things can get loud. Last summer, I was stuck playing music off my phone or with a dinky speaker that nobody could ever hear over the good times. Well, that all changed when I made the decision to get my hands on the Cambridge Soundworks Oots Angle 3 and really crank up the fun. Now, with more volume and louder bass, I've never heard my favorite songs so crystal clear. And that's not even the best part. At 10 ounces and water-resistant, the Cambridge Soundworks Oots Angle 3 has become my favorite hiking buddy. I take it everywhere to keep the music loud and the good times rolling. Hurry to a store near you and crank up the volume on your summer fun. We'll be right back. Why would you live anywhere else? Welcome back. We are here for the second quasi half of the show, and we are joined by another staff contributor, long time. You know him from Lookout Linkage, which he has run like an absolute champ for years on the site, rounding up all the news in baseball. We have Anders Jorstad. Anders, Durs, what is good?
Yes, what's going on?
How are you, man?
I'm pretty good. I'm great, dude.
Good. I'm really glad that you could join us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I still have David and Kate with me, and I realized that at the at the beginning of our show, we did not customarily discuss our imbibements for the evening. So, Kate, what are you drinking tonight?
Currently, I have the Ecliptic Brewing Zenith Grapefruit Ghost.
Remind me where Ecliptic is out of?
It is out of Portland.
That's P-Town.
That's right.
Yes.
Are you enjoying it?
It is bitter, so it fits today.
It whelms.
Yeah, and it's pretty low in alcohol. It's just like 4.5%, so it's not doing the job, much like the Mariners.
Ooh, bitter and failing. I have to say, I had that beer a couple days ago, and it did not impress.
No. So an appropriate beer drink for today.
David, what are you drinking? Are you back on the local brewery bandwagon?
I have unfortunately sold all the kegs of the local brewery lately, so no.
Okay.
I am drinking. I started with the Cast Out India Pale Ale from Crux Brewing.
Oh, I love Crux Brewing.
Yeah, and it was delicious. And now I am on to Ruination by Stone.
A classic.
Getting some booze in me.
Anders, you are not 21, is that correct?
That is correct for a very short period of time.
But at the present, you are not 21, and hence you would never be consuming alcohol, as that is illegal in these United States.
Not a chance.
That is, I completely understand and respect that. Have you had anything to drink tonight besides water?
I actually don't think so. No.
No, not even like
bless you, boy.
I got the good old H2O. That's all you need.
Not a high C.
High C. I don't think I even drank that when I was a kid.
Oh, not an all sport.
Knockoff Powerade. Now we're talking.
I used to love
never heard that before.
Never. What?
There's your whole role is to make me feel old. You do it well.
I would like them to bring back the high C Ecto Cooler. Remember that?
Oh, yes, I totally do.
The new Ghostbusters is out. I feel like this would be a great time to bring back Ecto Cooler.
That's true.
What's old is new.
What is the actual difference between Vitamin Water, Gatorade, and Powerade besides the actual branding?
Wait, Vitamin Water?
Yeah, I feel like it's very similar.
I mean, that's not a sports drink.
Nanobubbles.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like they're kind of interchangeable in the way that
what has nanobubbles?
Nanobubbles.
He's got them.
We should absolutely do a Seahawks podcast on a baseball podcast where we just talk about Russell Wilson. Anyway, that's neither here nor there.
I mean, there's nothing that controversial you could say about Russell Wilson, right?
No. He's a total. Yeah. He seems cool. Seems like a fun guy to hang out with. Anyway, I'm drinking whiskey because I want to forget. Woodinville.
Cool.
Distillery. Yeah, those guys are great.
Yeah.
I drank their bourbon for a long time and really enjoyed it. But recently I've been getting more into rye. Probably like Kate, I'm just feeling more bitter about the world and want less sugar in my life.
I love rye.
And just doing it straight. It's a great thing. Like a couple of our other shows, I've been struggling with sinus issues, so don't want to drink the beer because that'll just make it worse. So really loving this. You guys, speaking of bitter and angry, Nori Aoki.
A left fielder.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't dislike Nori Aoki as a person that likes to be entertained by watching other people do things.
He was fine when he was a Giant or a Royal. It was entertaining.
Yeah, and like his first year with the Brewers, I checked, and I think his first year, I'm going to butcher it, so I'll double check while I'm talking, but his first year in baseball with the Brewers, which was not very long ago, he hit something. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I think he was Rookie of the Year, wasn't he?
If he wasn't Rookie of the Year, he was quite good. He was fifth.
He hit 30 stolen bases.
He hit 37 doubles. That's the thing. Wow. Imagine Nori Aoki hitting a
37 double.
No. Ah, double. Nori Aoki apparently, according to my maths and numbers, has 8 doubles this year, which sounds like bullshit to me.
I don't think I've seen any of those.
I tell you what does.
And you've seen every game.
I tell you what does align with my eyes is that he leads the league in caught stealing at 7. Compared to 4 successful stolen bases. Tonight, he was playing left field, as he ostensibly does. And
his want to do.
He is very wont to do that. And a 3-1 splitter was thrown in the wrong location to Jose Iglesias, and he hit it too hard to the left field. It was a difficult catch, but Aoki, as he so often does, took a serpentine route, looked over his shoulder, and just sort of like did what you and I do when we're overmatched by life, and threw his arms in the air and fell over.
And just let the wall take us.
Yeah, and the ball bounced off the wall, and 2 runs scored, and before you knew it, this desperately struggling team was behind 3-0. And coming into today, he had a 638 OPS. He had a slugging of 316, which is below his on-base percentage, which is the only redeeming thing of his entire stat line, which is 322. I wrote about 3 weeks ago or so that I was ready to be done with him because he's reminding me of Sean Figgins, and he still does in his complete inability to hit the ball hard ever, anywhere, or do anything other than occasionally get on base, usually by screaming and rolling around on the ground as a ball hits him.
Which is true.
Yeah.
Or getting out of the way of said ball in a very athletic way, surprisingly.
Yeah. No, and he's a likable guy. Like, I didn't hate
the signing. It's not a condemnation of his soul.
No. I don't condemn anyone's soul but my own. Yeah, I'm just kind of done with him. I don't know how you guys are feeling. Anders, how do you feel about Aoki right now?
I mean, I feel like when the Mariners got him, to me it seemed like just kind of a nice move, I guess. Like a quietly, like, cool signing. Like, to me it wasn't like anything big, but I was like, I'm actually kind of excited to see Aoki. I mean, I thought maybe he'd be good for, you know, like, 2 wins and some fun gifts on Twitter occasionally.
He's been there.
And, you know, some you know, you could kind of suck up the defense that he was going to give you, because sometimes he'd be great and other times he'd be, like, a disaster, but it would even out. And I thought that maybe he would just kind of do.
Right.
And he's just not done.
He has not done.
I don't think I would consider him, like, a glaring hole at this point. Because I don't think he is, I don't think he's totally garbage. I think he's not good. I don't think he is, like, a terrible, horrible player. I think that he could be replaced, but I don't think that they should be desperate to replace him.
Anyone else want to chime in on anything?
Kate, I know Kate did some looking into his numbers.
I have some numbers. So here's the thing, Aoki. Everything he's doing right now is 30 to 40 points off of what his career numbers are. So Aoki was brought in because he has never had a double-digit K percentage. I mean, that's what he's supposed to be doing. He's the third best in the league at contact rate at 91.5%. I mean, this is what we're supposed to get, a guy who is on base a lot, makes a ton of contact, who does not strike out. I mean, his strikeout total over the past few seasons has been a third of what the MLB average is.
He's already struck out six more times than he did all of last year in 111 fewer plate appearances. So,
yeah, I mean, his K percentage is 11%. He's never had a double digit K percentage. So he's having kind of a historically awful year for him.
Yes.
And it's early. He's already hit into as many ground into double plays as he did all of last year.
Jeez.
His BABIP is over his current level. I mean, just everything's
down.
Wrong for him is going wrong.
His ISO's down more than 20 points, which
is saying something
bad. Down. Yeah. His WRC is down 20 points. He's a negative war player.
He slashed 205, 298. He had a good month of May where he slashed 284, 357, 373. He's down in June. He's down back down to 242, 299, 258. So he's not been able to recover the success he had in May, but then again, the whole team has sucked in May. So is it really fair to say, like, oh, he's, you know, his numbers look worse, I think, than they actually are, because he is suppressed by the entire offense of June.
I think the thing that I worry about with Aoki is when you hire Aoki, when you sign him, what you're looking for there is, and this has been a controversial term on the site, is a high floor.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But if everything goes right for Aoki, then what are you getting? Like Durs brought up the idea of a 2-win player. That's like his ceiling. You know what I mean?
There's no way he's getting there now.
No.
No.
Like this isn't something like Leonis Martin, where when he gets hot, it's like, holy shit, this guy's like one of the 2 or 3.
Center fielder.
Yeah, this is like one of the 2 or 3 best center fielders in the American League. Like, Nori Aoki at his best is like, hey, that's cool.
Yeah. but you can see what DePoto was trying to address.
Yes, I totally understand the motivation behind the signing. He was trying to fill the Mariner outfield last year was an absolute abomination. And the idea was to
Max movie out there.
Yeah, to plug that hole with something that was like, it was cheap, club controlled, and somebody who had been regularly dependable to be around league average. It was a perfectly understandable signing. It just has not gone well.
I have to say, I really dislike the signing from day one, just because it was the beginning of the outfield market. No one had made the first step, and it just felt like, hey, I found this at the dollar store. This must be a good water heater. Like,
wait, you found a water heater for a dollar?
I wish. I'm looking for one right now.
Don't buy one for a dollar.
Then
you'll end up with, how you end up with Nori Aoki.
For me, my Nori Aoki comp in my mind was actually the Mariners version of Randy Winn, but now I'm looking at the Mariners version of Randy Winn and realizing he was
pretty
much
damn
better.
Good.
Yeah.
I love Randy Wynn. Criminally underrated.
I understand it as like a philosophical shift away from the Jack Z era. Right. Large behemoths bumbling along and, you know.
Mark Trumbo.
Yeah.
Hey. Horse.
Calm down.
So in some ways he's trying to say like, no, I want to get faster. I want to get more athletic. The problem is I think Aoki is deceptively athletic. He looks like he would be small and speedy, but actually he is like
gangly
and from the Charlie Brown, like just a cloud of parts.
Smelling stuff.
He stole 50 bases in his first 2 years combined.
He's slow now. But, I watched him run. He is not fast. He's lost.
Didn't he have that session with Julio Cruz or something where he was supposed to teach him how to steal bases?
I'm sure he's faster than Julio Cruz is now.
Can I speak to that? Because Julio Cruz was actually one of my coaches in high school, and he didn't teach me how to run faster.
Right. Oh, you know, you just get a good jump, and then you slide and you're safe.
You just steal the base.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's not exactly like we're electrifying frogs.
hit talk with Mickey Mantle.
Don't they say what speed doesn't age, or is it that speed does age?
Speed does not slump is the traditional. That's what it was.
Well, it does age.
It I does guess. Erode, much like the
like
shore.
Like a fine wine, speed ages.
Can we talk about, is it time to cut ties with Aoki? Is it time to look into Kate or into our system? Because I have some names.
Well, is it Book Powell?
Kate has someone laying in waiting to cut ties.
Well, here's the thing. Emotionally, I'm ready to move on because I'm just at the point where, like I said, if he gets it right, what are you still getting? Like, it's just not an exciting package, whether he's playing his best or playing what he's currently playing at. So I don't necessarily think that's the right move unless they have a major league upgrade in mind in order to go acquire. But yeah, Kate, go ahead. Like, there are people in the organization that can do that job.
There are people in the organization who can do the job. And obviously, Boo Powell has taken a lot of the attention, and he deservedly so. Like, he's fun to watch.
Yeah.
Question is the bat there? And it might not be. It might not be quite yet.
It's not.
The real question is, because we would all agree Boog Powell's a defensive upgrade.
Huge.
The real question is, with, let's call it, because that's probably, we kind of platoon that position, even though we really don't. Let's say there's 300 PAs at left field left in the season. Over 300 PAs, is Boog Powell worth minus 0.1 FWAR or worse or better?
Than Nori Aoki?
No, as in Nori Aoki in 300 PAs has been worth minus point one FWAR.
Oh, yeah.
You know, well, my question is can we just play Goody more? Because Goody can break.
I think they'd be nervous about doing that because of his health issues. And right now you have a healthy Goody who's contributing in a big way, and you don't want to mess with that.
It's hard. And the other question is what's best for the player. And that's a constant tension that the team is trying. It speaks to a lot of the way they've had to handle Sardinia so far this year of like, you know, do we want this guy to come in and fill a need part time, or do we want to try to develop him further to major leagues for a full time job next year or another year? You know what I mean? So I don't know if the idea of calling Boog up, even though I saw him 2 days ago.
It'd be exciting. Undoubtedly exciting.
Him and Leonis in the outfield together would catch a lot of fly balls. He is very rangy.
If the season is just an absolute tank at the, you know, if they
He's a lost season call up to be sure.
Yeah. So I wouldn't mind that. The name I would like to kick out there, and you can tell me I'm crazy, but the name I would like to kick out there is
Steph Romero.
Patrick Keelan.
Oh, man. Okay. I was not picking that one.
You know, Durs likes it.
Hitting 308 in Tacoma, as of tonight, has just hit a double to put the Rainiers up 5-0 and is amazing in the field. Can cover tons of ground.
I didn't know that he was a good defender.
Yeah, he can.
I think what you're running into in Keelan is both him and Boog are running into the situation of they're guys that when the rosters expand in a lost season on September 1st, they're definitely getting called up. They're definitely going to play, and they're definitely going to get an audition. But for a team that is still trying very much like we talked earlier in the show, that's very much in playoff condition contention, even though they've just been shitting the bed for this month, are those guys – you want a surer thing than giving – two guys their major league debuts that aren't clearly like top level prospects. So I think Boog is the one that makes more sense because he upgrades the defense and that's a more sure bet than his bat. Yeah. And Aoki's bat is garbage. So you're not really losing that much if Boog's bat is garbage. But, you know, I still think that the best thing to do is to for the rest of the season is to look for a major league replacement through trade. I have no idea at this point who that would be
to or what our package we can give.
I was going to toss out the in organization name of Heredia, and then I realized that his ISO is complete garbage. So he's basically Aoki in AA.
Yeah,
AA, not AAA. And was,
which is a step below AAA.
I mean, if my math is correct, yes.
Yeah, so let's not do that.
Yeah.
For me, the big question this org faces, and I think personally, if they do decide to do something with Aoki, it's via trade. But the second question is, Aoki currently has something like 285 or 4 PAs or something. At 480 PAs, his option for 2017 automatically vests.
Ooh.
Do not
so. Punt. They need to start thinking about that because he's going to get that if he keeps his current level of play.
He won't, though. You've already seen the team. I think Sunday he was a healthy – like they played Sean O'Malley over Nori Aoki on Sunday when David Price started.
Yeah.
Like they've made the adjustment there. They know – that unlike Mariner organizations and managers and front offices of the past, they're not just blindly throwing – it's not – Willie Blomquist starting at shortstop and leading off. Like they're
Logan Morrison leading off.
Yeah, they've adjusted. So Aoki's bad. I think we all agree with that, and I think we're all ready to move on. Do we want to move on to Twitter Q&A to end this episode?
I think we absolutely do.
Okay. Did we get any questions from the Nice
People? We have some excellent questions. Once again, thank you all so much for participating and asking us some questions. The first one we're going to deal with comes from Chris of @I_Miss_Munenori, also known on the site as Munenori's Espresso Stand.
Oh, I know Chris.
Oh, you know.
I think I've heard of that guy.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, as of tonight, what is the one Mariners pitch you want back most of all?
I can take that to lead off. It's the C-Sheck pitch to Albert Pujols.
Yep.
After that eighth inning rally that just captured a lot of people's imagination when the team was still playing well, and he had Albert Pujols, and Albert Pujols is bad, and he had two people on base, and like he's done a couple times this year, he threw the ball in the one spot you cannot throw it to a bad hitter, and Pujols crushed it. And in some ways, even though the team was good after that, I don't feel like the season has quite been the same since that pitch. And that's the one that I would take back.
That's a good pick. I changed my answer. That's my answer too.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I like that.
Yeah.
Darius, what are you feeling?
Oh man, like I'm not good at remembering individual pitches. So so I was gonna go with that one works. The one against the Rangers recently.
Yeah. To Prince Fielder. Yeah,
the Prince Fielder.
That's brutal. Gonna be my choice initially.
That is my choice.
I agree with you, Nathan. Like the Pujols one was so much more crushing.
That one felt bad because Pujols pimped it so hard. Ugh.
And because as bad as Albert Pujols is, Prince Fielder is worse.
Like, true.
You have to try so hard.
Fielder's been pretty damn bad this year too.
It's been just so awful.
Do you know who owns Prince Fielder? Who is one of our relievers?
Is it Pedalino?
It is Mike Montgomery.
Oh, that's true. He was getting him to bite a ton.
Yeah. Prince Fielder's bad. Just don't throw Prince Fielder's down the heart of the plate.
WRC plus of 52.
Just don't.
That's Mike 30 Zunino. Points below he's Nori
Mike Zunino at first base making $25 million. Don't throw the ball down the heart of the plate.
Negative 1.6 F war?
Yes.
Wow.
Holy crap. He's only 300 PAs in.
Okay, here's a good question. This comes from Karina Kotek.
I like Karina. Yes, I know Karina.
It's you can find Karina at filler, PHILER, the number 25. I'm getting into fishing. What are the essentials for my tackle box?
Do any of you fish?
I do, but I was wondering if Durs could give her some tips.
I should know. I've never been fishing before, which is kind of a shame because I have my Eagle Scout.
What? How'd you get it without fishing?
Yeah, I hated fishing. I refused to get anywhere near that merit badge, man.
What would you imagine being the most essential of the tackle box?
Probably like the fishing rod, right? Or is that not part of the box?
Durs. I've never been more upset with you than I am at this exact moment.
I told you, I've never once.
You are an Eagle Scout who is not sure if...
Nathan, I barely know how to tie a stupid square knot.
So you're saying that an Eagle Scout is politics, just like everything else?
I mean, mostly it's just doing everything at the last second, like everything else.
Like college?
Yeah, pretty much. No, I literally got my Eagle Scout on the day before my 18th birthday. They stamped it on my 18th birthday.
Oh yeah, that's sketchy.
Yeah, I was inactive in my troop for like at least 3 years.
Kate, do you fish at all?
Who do you think you're talking to?
Okay, since you guys are not fishermen,
hooks, fishing one, bait.
Okay, hooks and bait.
Whiskey.
Why? I was on the right track
whiskey.
Though.
That's my desire answer. To conquer nature.
I'm gonna give Karina some hot tips here. All right. I'm assuming if you're getting into fishing, you're lure casting, not fly. If you're lure casting, fish at night on a lake. Get a nice popper. You want top skimming stuff, but a night with the full moon, you get a bobber or a popper, something that skims. You're gonna catch a nice amount of smallmouth bass. During the day, if you're on the fly. Late June, I do something that drops in like caddy fly or something kind of nymphy. It's that time of year.
Are you speaking English right
now? Yeah, I was going to say.
A toy, 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 toy.
Those are my fishing tips.
Describing Nori Aoki.
It's like when I listen to the Korean calls of Daeho Lee's home runs, the only thing I pick out is Daeho!
Hopper!
Korean flowers is low-key my favorite thing about this season.
I love those calls.
I don't. I'm like, hey, I know that.
Raina, I hope us enjoying Korean Mike Flowers answers your question.
So this comes in from Benjamin Kasperson,
who is which is a spice. Before.
Yes, and he you can find him once again at Ben the Analyst.
That's how you know he's real.
Texas 20 above 500, M's one game, sadly now zero games above 500. Mostly bullshit or better than the M's?
Oh, they're better than the M's.
Oh, they're much better.
But it is also a fair amount of bullshit.
Yeah, and also they are now not completely healthy like the M's.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's true.
But they are probably, if not the best, the second best team in the American League behind the Red Sox, maybe.
We touched on it earlier in the show.
All right. Well, sorry for being naive and ignorant.
No, it's don't you ever apologize.
So much apologies.
For that. You're an American, nurse. Don't you ever apologize for being ignorant.
You're a white, straight American male.
Yeah, that's your brand, brother.
You
cling to
all right.
That.
Knows nothing about fishing.
Doesn't that mean I owe more apologies?
No, so we... We talked about it a little bit in the show. The thing that separates the Rangers from the Mariners is their depth. When something goes wrong, they have a plan B and a plan C. And that's not a criticism.
Who's this guy in AAA? Oh, a 4.5 win player?
Yeah.
Sure.
Oh, hey, Nomar Mazara. Wait, you're just throwing syllables together. Yeah. Nope, he's the American League Rookie of the Year. Sorry. He hit a ball 500 feet. Screw you. Yeah, and they still have, you know, two or three. They have Joey Gallo. They have a couple other guys down there that can just – they're major leaguers just waiting to come up. And that's
they have a bank of creative players that are all like 97.
Yeah. What they did is they did the you know, the in-app purchase, and they bought all of the currency.
Gold cards.
Yeah. that's what the Rangers have done. So it's a byproduct of having the same front office in place for a long time and having them be smart and prioritizing scouting and development. And the Mariners just, I mean, whether Jerry Dipoto and Andy McKay and company are going to be good at that or not, they just haven't had time. So that's been the big difference when the Mariners have had guys go down. I mean, we had Nori Aoki starting in center field for 2.5 weeks. It was a nightmare.
God, don't mind me.
How do we do that?
That's where most of his negative value comes from.
And hitting and playing left field and running the bases.
Being the 81 WRC plus doesn't help.
No. Being him doesn't help.
Which, speaking, I mean, we don't need to talk about it very long because none of us are really draft analysts, but Kyle Lewis, that's happened.
Baller.
He's not been that great in the first few games, as far as I
know. Okay, we should. You're right. We should cut him.
Yeah. We should just release him.
Is he even good?
I mean, I don't know.
Okay. Where is Mercer anyway?
Do we get questions about Tyler O'Neill's forearms? Like, I would love to talk about that for a little while.
Well, I mean, we can act like we did. We just about Tyler O'Neill's forearms. We just
freshly got a tweet that said, Tyler O'Neill's forearms, photoshopped? Question mark.
We have a Tyler O'Neill truther.
Ooh.
So, Kate, wait, I can't remember. Isn't Tyler O'Neill's dad, like, Mr. Canada?
He was, like, the bodybuilder, Mr. Canada or whatever.
Yeah, which...
He also can tie a hell of a tie.
Tyler O'Neill is very strong.
It is true. He is shaped like a triangle. He is Triangle Man, Triangle Man.
Thank God he decided to play
inverted
baseball.
Triangle, though, right?
Well, he's like one triangle on top of
top of another. Some would call that the hourglass.
No, but it's like it's two upside down triangles.
So. At the same time. Where's the... Yeah, he.
Oh, sure.
He has to buy the 38 waist pants, even though he wears a 34, because it's
and his ankles are so frail.
They're so frail.
Okay, we have a follow up question from Karina about fishing, and I think Durs can answer this one.
Oh, okay.
Follow up question: growler or canned beer while fishing? She leans towards cans.
Durs, don't fuck this up.
Oh man. Is
the growler part of the tackle?
I'll go with canned.
Attaboy.
That's
good for you.
Sir. Also good for going on the beach with.
Yeah. And it leaves less of a footprint.
But I don't drink, so I wouldn't know.
No, well,
you could imagine.
You've drank a Coke out of a can.
I've thought about drinking before, so I, you know, in my simulations, I would go canned.
No, you should do cans for drinking anywhere outdoors. That's yes. always the correct answer.
I drink cans indoors.
I do too. But especially if you're going to be outdoors, because it's easier to crush and to throw away, less footprint, like you said. I personally just prefer the way beer tastes out of a can compared to a bottle. So definitely go can. Do we have anything else? Let's do a couple more and then wrap it up.
We have, and I think this is perfect for having Kate on, because I'd say she's the most philosophically inclined of all of us.
Definitely the smartest, yes.
The smartest, yeah, most depth of thought, clearly. We have a question from Dylan Jenkins at the D Jenks.
Love Dylan.
D spelled D-E Jenks, J-E-N-K-S. The D Jenks.
University. Sorry.
He asks, what if the Mariners... weren't the Mariners, like, philosophically speaking?
Did he say, like, philosophically speaking?
Yes. Whoa.
What's the theory, the absent watchmaker theory?
Oh, that's the deist. That's the theory of deism.
Yeah, that's a pretty good lens to view the Mariners through.
Like. Who's their watchmaker? Lou Piniella.
A man.
Who made Bill Cottle? Did Bill Cottle make the Mariners?
No. It's not a name we know. It's a distant and
we don't speak the language. It's not something we would recognize as language, I would assume.
No, I think that there's definitely a creation myth about the Mariners that involves them like coming down into Safeco from a thunderbolt. Just like making their own. Yeah, I don't know. I've adopted Zen Buddhism as a way to view the Mariners.
Good
like
for you.
Suffering, attachment to wins causes suffering. So yeah. I'm training myself to get not attached to wins.
Instead, you have attachment to Boog.
Yeah.
That's true.
The Mariners are if you imagine that they were like literally just guys that were bad at their jobs and got shipwrecked on Puget Sound and then just decided to play baseball because they had nothing better to do, I guess it makes more sense. But if the Mariners weren't the Mariners, they would be the Rangers? Brewers. Yes. They'd be the Brewers. I don't know.
Which is ironic.
Well, they're 500 team, which means the inverse of 500 is 500.
Whoa.
They'd be the same team, but instead they would have started off doing really, really terribly. And then they'd be on some like crazy, like 23-10 in their last 33 games. And we'd be like, oh my God, this team is brilliant.
Durs.
Yeah.
Is time a three-dimensional spheroid? It is not.
Or a flat circle.
It's a flat circle, Durs.
How can we be sure? Is it
the TV? Because the TV told me so.
Is it because of what happened to Michael Morse?
If you would like to submit a transcript of this podcast for college credit, I will happily sign off on it.
All right, one more Twitter question, and then we'll wrap it up.
This comes from a man we all know, Leonard Sue, a.k.a. Toblerone That Dog, who you can find at Leonard_Sue. S-U. Leonard per you guys. a Toblerone named Sue. Per you guys, do open a brewery, don't have kids. Position on watching baseball.
I'm not watching a lot of baseball right now, to be perfectly honest. But it's not because the Mariners are losing entirely. So don't open a brewery, David.
I go back and forth.
Don't have kids, because then you'll never have a free second for the rest of your life. Do watch the Mariners, I guess, if you have nothing better to do. But if you have other things to do, don't make time for the Mariners, I think would be the key takeaway. Would you guys agree with that? Like, if there's something else going on, go do that. And then if you're home in the quiet hours and you need something to fill the time, then Mariners. But only in that context, if that makes sense.
I think I'm still trying to get out of the habit of trying to make time for the Mariners. Because I find myself just watching every game just because.
And how is that making you feel, Durs?
I think at this point I've kind of gotten to the point where I'm just shrugging at losses. I'm like, okay, cool.
But is it?
And I don't know what that means. Like, I don't feel like I'm ready to give up the season. And
no.
I don't feel like,
no.
like not caring. I'm just like,
no.
Okay, they lost.
But there's so many games. You don't have to watch all of them is kind of the takeaway, right?
I mean, I don't have to. I just do.
Kate, are you watching all the games?
I have watched basically all the games.
Kate, how is that Zen Buddhism?
You know, I'm a child of the 90s, so like cynicism comes really easily to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's my mother tongue.
My Rosetta Stone.
The only game that I remember being like, fuck this, I do not want to watch any more of this. And actually, I was playing trivia that night and I just laid my head on the bar and looked away from the TV. Was the loss to Texas where it was like 0-6, I think it was.
Mm.
I don't know. David recapped with just like some bullshit about his family in Ireland.
And it was bullshit, David.
That was the worst game I think I've watched in a long time. That was a while ago now.
Yeah, that was April.
Game of the season still. And, you know, that kind of, like, emotionally bottomed me out. So,
yes.
You know, from the rest of it, it's...
Because that was the final game of the losing streak to start the season.
Before Dayhill everyone walked off Jake Diekman.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we thought things had all turned around, and now here we are at 500. Yeah, I don't know.
It's hard to take the temperature because it's so ludicrous. The season's been so ludicrous.
Baseball, every season, like, there's so many examples. Brendan cited one of the 2001 A's who started 2-10 and won 102 games. The 2003 Marlins fired their manager around this time of year and hired an old man who, like, could barely, like, pronounce most of the names of his players, and they won the World Series. The 2007 Rockies won, like, 29 of their last 31 games and went to the World Series. Like, stuff happens. This is why we talk about small sample size. We're not even halfway through the season. The team is 1-6-7 game winning streak from being right there in a playoff push. And who's to say that they're not going to do that? There is nothing other than the fact that June has been a miserable shit show on the entire season-wide spectrum that says they cannot do that. They have the talent. They have the offense. They have the position players to make that happen. So, you know, it sucks, June. It's been...
You know, Nathan, one of the things that we talked about was how when we were winning, it kind of flattened out the individual stories. Like last year, Goody loomed large because it was a bright star in a sky full of shit. And we haven't really had that this year because things have been successful. Things have been going well. And, you know, there are things like the Dejo walk-off and the Leonis walk-off.
The 10-run comeback.
Yeah. I mean, there have been these incredible moments, but like maybe they've been kind of softened somehow by the overall. And so maybe we can get back to just like really appreciating moments of brilliance in a sea of sadness. And that's the key to
is that what you're looking forward to?
I mean, that's what we've learned to do. That's what we know.
You know, when we were winning, it kind of felt strange to me. Like, I didn't know how to react to it.
By being happy. I chose to be happy.
Me too. I mean, I was happy, but, like, I didn't, like, it was like, I didn't feel like the Mariners. And that's not a good thing to say, because we should want our team to win. And I did want my team to win. But at the same time, it didn't feel like the same team. It felt like an inauthentic version of my favorite team.
I think that we're just... It's just too. It feels bizarre because we're 70 plus games in. It's still too early to try to be fatalistic one way or the other about this team.
Yes.
In a month, in close to the trade, because in you know 2 weeks or so, they're going to have to decide to start to decide what they're going to do around the trade deadline.
Yep.
And that's when it's going to get real, because if they're going to try to add somebody, that's their decision that they're going to go for it. They're going to have to give up somebody like Tyler O'Neill or, you know, somebody. Do they have
enough? Ketel Marte.
What?
Oof.
What?
Durs.
I can't imagine.
They just traded Chris Taylor. Durs.
I can't imagine they get anyone of consequence without someone asking about him.
No. No.
Okay. No. So
I knew this would happen eventually.
But that's what
my
I'm saying.
Dreams are coming true.
Wow. So I guess for me, we can get to trading Ketel Marte.
Yeah,
but
we're wrapping up.
We're
what I was just going to say is the last 3 weeks, they are on a pace that would, over a full season, lose more than 100 games. So it feels really bad.
Yeah.
But the truth of the matter is the team is 500 on June 22nd.
In position to make a wild card push. The question is, can they get their team healthy and can they start playing like the team that they have been? And can they start winning some more of these closer games? And there's no reason to think that they can't. There's nothing about this roster that screams they fundamentally cannot win close games.
Yep.
So we're going to hope for that, and we're going to move forward. And hopefully when we talk to you this time-ish next week, they've gone 5-2 or something thereabouts and have started to turn the corner. I am really thankful to Kate, David, and Durs for joining us. We are really sorry as a staff. We take full responsibility for the way things have gone in June. We haven't been podcasting regularly. We are that told you to be excited when they had a good record, when what we really should have been saying was, don't be excited. It's not fun to win, and it will never...
Start crying, you babies.
Yes, that's what we should have said.
Hashtag hold LL accountable.
Yes, we should have been, and we did not. We were asleep, but now we're woke. So tune in next week for more wokeness, and you all, thanks for joining us, and have a great week.
Oh, thanks to Cambridge Sound. Yeah,
yes,
Sound
thank
Works.
You for the reminder. Thank you to Cambridge Soundworks for the sponsorship, and we will see you guys next week. And Goms and the Biz ain't dead, so go Biz, and we'll see you soon.
We met in the springtime when blossoms unfold, the pastures were green and the meadows were gold. Our love was in flower as summer grew on. Her love, like the leaves, now have withered and gone. The roses have faded, there's frost at my door. The birds in the morning don't sing anymore. The grass in the valley is starting to die, and out in the darkness the whippoorwills cry. Alone and forsaken by fate and by man, oh Lord, if you hear me, please hold my hand. Oh, please understand. Oh, where has she gone to? Oh, where can she be? She may have forsaken some other like me. She promised to honor, to love and obey. Each vow was a plaything that she threw away. The darkness is falling, the sky has turned gray. A hound in the distance is starting to bay. I wonder what she's thinking of. Forsaken, forgotten, without any love. Alone and forsaken by fate and by man. Oh Lord, if you hear me, please hold my hand. Oh, please understand.